Online in Business. Voice America Business.
Welcome to CIO Talk Radio with your host, Sunjoe Gall. All comments, views, and opinions expressed on this show are strictly those of the host, guests, and callers. Here's Sunjoe Gall.
Good morning and welcome to CIO Talk Radio. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. Today's topic is effective IT audits and auditors. Our guests for today's show are Anne McCroy, Everett Johnson, and Anton Chagourin. Anne is the Editorial Director and Editor-in-Chief of CIO Decisions Magazine and Conference. Everett is the past International President of ISACA and the IT Governance Institute, which is also has an acronym ITGI. Now, Anton is the Executive Vice President and Chief Information Officer with the American Stock Exchange. Good morning, panel. Welcome to the show.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you. Good morning.
How is everybody doing? How's summer treating you?
Oh, it's great. It's very hot here and very humid, but I love it nonetheless.
I haven't enjoyed it yet myself.
I think it's been hot and humid all over, hasn't it?
So who's out shopping and playing golf versus working?
Well, not us, certainly. We're all working, I guess, right? One of you guys is calling in from the golf course.
That's right. Yeah, well, let me tee off real quick.
Okay, great. Hey, thank you again for accepting the invitation. This is supposed to be a very, very touchy topic for most people, frankly, because there's a lot riding on IT audits and the compliance mandates, and there are heavy penalties for not complying properly. The fact remains is that IT audits have usually been the stepchild of most organizations, and I'm not trying to downplay, but that's sometimes seen as something which is to be, you have to get done with. This is not something which is critical to the very mission of an organization. So when an auditor comes in or an audit plan is being put in place, that is not something people are doing with a lot of zeal. So with that kind of mindset, what kind of results can we actually expect?
And Doug, I think you really hit the nail on the head as far as the issue goes in terms of that people really tend to dread audits, at least when they're not familiar with them, and there's certainly a lot of work for everybody involved. But I think everyone really needs to take the holistic view and really realize the key objective is to reduce risk in the organization, and that's really an organization-wide kind of objective that any CIO as well as any auditor can buy into. So I think once you acknowledge that and you realize you're working towards a common goal, that there really is value in the process and in the preparation that you need to do for the process to really make sure that you're locking down the systems that need to be locked down and have the policies and procedures in place to really ensure that risk is at acceptable levels in your organization. So that's really what I think it comes down to.
I would agree with Anne. I think although you find a range of attitudes from kind of a business-focused, IT governance approach where organizations really embrace this to try and get the maximum benefit, business benefits out on one hand, and then you have on the other hand organizations that are going to do the minimum they need to do to be in compliance. And they're the ones that frequently don't get the benefits, and the audit is a real fire drill for them and so forth. So, and you've got a range of organizations in between those two extremes.
I guess to jump in, as Anton, just jump in kind of the middle, and I guess there's not going to be a huge debate on question one kind of thing, but I kind of like the two kind of key words that were brought up between Anne and Everett. I mean, one, it's on risk, and it's on governance. And I think from that, it is a message that has to be instilled and understood in the organization. Governance is a little broader in the sense that we have to kind of manage it effectively. But ultimately, when I kind of look at this from an operating business standpoint, I'll take it from a practitioner's point of view and from a manager's point of view that operates today. The biggest challenge you look at, at least with us, is the distinction between internal audit and external audit. The internal audit that we have somewhat becomes ineffective in the sense that, and it is driven by the very statement that you made to open the question, the fact that it hasn't been instilled, it hasn't been embraced, it hasn't been at least integrated to the extent in which that the general operating part of the business, the technology organizations themselves, have actually made that a part of the process. And expectation as a result of the process. Again, trying to manage the business's risk and trying to manage the effectiveness of the controls that we put in place. So again, just to kind of underscore their sentiment, I think one, it's a risk awareness, it's a risk appreciation, and then from a management standpoint, it's a governance to make sure that message, one, is clearly communicated, and it becomes integrated.
Now, coming to the point where we are trying to say that, you know, it should be understood. Now, given that I have a programmer or I have a DBA, for example, in a company, how much do they respect and even are aware of the risk and the governance aspect of an organization for them to be able to embrace an auditor when he or she comes in and says, you know what, I'm going to make you feel good about yourself, and are we going to help make your IT better or your organization better and more risk averse and have a better governance? I mean, do they really get it for them to adopt?
If you want, I can jump in real quick.
Sure.
The clear answer to me is yes, they do get it, especially if the message is clear and consistent in the organization. And I think when it comes down to a developer, right, or an engineer or an operator, it really falls down to the fundamentals. The fundamentals to me, or the foundation to the audit process, is really looking at the procedures, the process, the controls that are in place, and how effective they are. So a developer, per se, you can use an example of a SDLC, or software development lifecycle. Looking at how that is controlled, looking at how quality is controlled and how software is produced, that can be instilled in this process. So yes, I do think they can and are educated in the business risk of what can happen, especially in the businesses that we operate today.
And the auditors typically will bring, you know, a wide breadth of experience from other organizations, from best practices, and that sort of thing, and can very often be helpful to someone like a DBA or a software developer in providing new ideas in how things can be done more effectively.
Right, and I would just jump in and say, you know, good documentation is really key to having a successful audit and having an audit that's less painful than it might otherwise be. So to the extent that you're telling your people that they're and showing them the ways they really need to document all the things they're doing, all the controls they're putting in place, the processes that they're following, et cetera, you know, I think that really is part of becomes part of the culture.
I would say I'm into that. So let's sympathize a little bit with the IT auditor who comes in into an uncharted territory. I'm typically talking about an external auditor, and then he or she has to deal with strangers within the organization. And when we talk about them doing their job effectively, frankly, they need all the support from the executive management, but also people who they are going to work with, you know, hand in hand to get some information out and then try to report on that. They don't know these people, they don't trust, and they don't like. With that kind of arrangement, there has to be something beyond a directive coming from the corporation, say that you have an auditor coming on April 12th, please deal with him and support him. What else is done?
Well, very often you'll have kind of a pre-planning kind of activity where you do get to meet the people. If you're new to that organization as an external auditor, you get to meet the key people, and very often there's kind of a kind of high level assessment to looking for major areas where there might be issues or where the audit should be focused, and so the auditor can do a more intelligent job of planning. One of the techniques that a lot of organizations do. They'll appoint someone at the IT management group as an audit coordinator who can work with all the different auditors, internal, external, regulators, etc., who gets to understand the purposes of the audit and the kinds of things that auditors need to know. And in the planning process, it can... One of the techniques that I think is very useful is to request that the auditor provide the IT organization with a list of the documents that they would like and when they would like them, and a list of the interviews and generally when they would be doing those interviews, which forces the auditor to do a little bit better job of planning. But it really, I think, makes it a lot easier on the IT organization to embrace the audit in that kind of a situation.
Anton?
Yeah, I'm sorry, I was on mute for a moment. One, I want to say, I'm not quite sure I agree that a corporate directive is inadequate. I actually do think it does start it. And although this, my next statement may sound very textbook-like, but I do believe it starts with the tone at the top and that message that, that is instilled in the organization, especially in the age of compliance that we're in now. And again, with that recognition of the importance around risk, to kind of use Ann's term again, I think that does start it. And if I kind of wrap into Everett's comment, and this, and we actually practice this, we do have accountable people. In this case, a risk management person is assigned to help sponsor and help manage the audit process. Not to, you know, discount the independence of the auditor themselves, but to help one chaperone and to provide that, that next level of support and mandate message throughout the operating and technical organization. So that, that to me is definitely key. And I think from there, and to kind of, again, echo Everett's comment, we do force an engagement process, right? So the auditor has to go through an engagement process where with the people and the topics that he's auditing. So there is an awareness of what's being asked for. There is an advanced documentation request. There is a scope defined to the audit. So it's an eyes wide open situation. So I think for me, I do think it is directive-led. I do think it is supported at a management level and through an accountability level. And I do think it does need the ownership via whether what we've done here from a risk management person being responsible for it, or at least the key line managers being responsible for their portions of the audit, that keeps that momentum going.
And if a CIO will insist on the kind of things that Antoine is talking about, they'll get a much better audit.
Yeah, I would agree. I'm not sure I have too much to add here. Certainly Everett and Anton have really covered sort of the key issues, you know, especially as far as having sort of a project manager, if you will, who really has the time to work with folks and really help them if they're running into stumbling blocks or manage the cultural issues that may come. I think some of the challenges are when the auditors, especially external ones, are not particularly experienced and not knowledgeable about your culture, or about your infrastructure and things like that, and they come in sort of trying to go by textbook things that really aren't going to fit with your thing, and then you really have to work with them a little bit differently. But I think we're going to get to that a little bit later, just talking about training and choosing the right kind of auditors for the kind of work that you need done.
Now, the fact remains that when an auditor goes in, usually they are asked to, of course, work closely with the executive management, understand their plan, and actually work with their expectation and meet those expectations. I mean, their typical expectation from a compliance are their standard. But if there's anything which is driving an auditor to work in somebody else, or based on somebody else's discretion or direction, then that independence may be taken away, and the creativity of an auditor or a place where he would be able to go and he or she will be able to go and find something beyond what management expected, that might get stifled. But is that truly the case? Is that what is happening today? Is an auditor's independence being taken away when they are asked to work in line with management expectations? Let's talk more about it when we come back from the break, so please stay tuned.
Talk about his money. Call us toll-free, 866-472-5790, and talk to the experts. We talk money all the time. Voice America Business.
CIO Decisions is the first executive IT magazine to focus on mid-sized businesses. CIO Decisions offers IT executives management strategies and advice for aligning business and IT at fast-growing mid-sized companies. Subscribe today and receive 12 monthly issues of CIO Decisions magazine at no charge to you. Visit ciodecisions.com/subscribe1.
The Communication Catalyst with Tammy Quinn is a provocative radio talk show for business owners and corporate executives who are impacting their bottom line by improving their organization's social structure. Tune in every Wednesday at 12 p.m. Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America Business Channel for The Communication Catalyst, building better business behaviors.
Looking for flexible ways to scale your IT efforts? Then visit www.aval.com today. Aval helps companies find the global IT talent they need to align their IT and business objectives. Whether it's hiring top IT leadership talent or building a reliable technology team, Aval delivers. To find out how Aval can help your company, visit www.aval.com or call 1-800-947-2832. Aval, delivering global IT talent. That's www.aval, A-V-V-A-L, aval.com. Visit today.
In the ever-changing world of real estate, Mark Heller and Brian Church bring to Internet Talk Radio all the latest information, trends, and changes in the real estate market. And these guys pull no punches. That's Real Estate Talk with Mark Heller and Brian Church every Sunday afternoon at 2 p.m. Pacific on the Voice America channel.
The Internet's only all-business and financial radio network, Voice America Business.
You are listening to CIO Talk Radio. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. If you have a question or comment, call toll-free 1-866-472-5790. Now back to the show. Here's Sanjo Gall.
Welcome back to the show, folks. For listeners who've just tuned in, today's topic is effective IT audits and auditors. Our guests for today's show are Ann McCroy, Everett Johnson, and Anton Shagori. Ann is the editorial director, editor-in-chief of CIO Decisions Magazine and Conference. Everett is the past international president of ISAC and the IT Governance Institute. And Anton is the executive vice president and chief information officer for the American Stock Exchange. Before the break, we just touched the point where the auditor is asked to work with an audit plan. And that they want the management wants them to work in line with the expectations that they are setting. Is in any way an auditor's independence jeopardized by taking this approach?
This is Anton. I do not believe their independence is jeopardized or put into question when a business tries to at least direct an audit to the areas of business that are important or the things in which that are material. And I think that's kind of the key statement for me. I think the auditor, while independent, you know, needs to ensure they're focused on material issues to the business, and that goes again to risk and applied risk and risk as is perceived to the business themselves. And I think basically we get into jeopardy around at least the presumption of independence when there's a lack of familiarity of the business or the industry. And that's where I think a lot of the audits or the auditor's efforts make it even discredited when it actually arrives at the audit committee level. And that's where I think a lot of the back pressure, pardon to kind of use the phrase, starts. And that can impact, one, at the audit, at management, and even down at the staff level if there's things that are perceived that are not relevant to the direction of the business, to the pressure of the business, or to the controls that need to be managed to maintain that business. So I think for me, independence comes within the audit actions themselves, not necessarily within the direction that has been set for them, you know, by the business, by management of the areas that probably need to focus.
Right. I would agree with Anton. I think the auditors that we've spoken to here at the magazine certainly really assert that they are independent. And I think it comes at a perception level within the organization that it seems like they're coming at the behest of management and sort of trying to enforce things for one person or another or one department or another or that kind of a thing. I mean, in general, you know, auditors come in and they examine what you're doing and your policies and procedures and controls, but at the end of the day, they're not the ones that are going to be telling you exactly how to fix them. You know, they just present their findings to management, and then management and the IT staff and whoever else is involved really need to evaluate what needs to be fixed and if the cost of fixing it outweighs the amount of risk, you know, what the acceptable level of risk is. So I think just, you know, in their efforts to uncover where the soft spots are in an infrastructure or policies or what have you, you know, I think that can and is done independently. And obviously they need some sort of game plan, if you will, from management, but that doesn't jeopardize their independence.
Yeah, I think there's some confusion about independence because independence and objectivity are kind of key underpinnings of the whole audit process. But But by the same token, if you take a large IT organization, you just don't turn the auditors loose and say, you know, go audit. You define a scope, and you have some objectives, whether it's an external audit for auditing the reliability of the financial statements, which, you know, has some very clear objectives, or whether it's an internal audit to audit the effectiveness of the system's development process or whatever. But the scope is defined usually by management. But within that scope, the auditor has a lot of latitude, a lot of independence about what he or she looks at, the approach that's taken, and so forth. So I think the premise about, you know, management setting the sort of boundaries and that compromising independence, I think we're talking about two different things here, scope and independence.
So talking about independence, in any form or fashion, do you ever feel, or you would be talking to so many people as auditors, and you've been an auditor in your life as well, do you ever feel chained in any form or fashion when you go to an organization, or what could possibly cause that feeling to come?
The
feeling of being chained and being working under duress of some management trying to drive you.
Well, when management imposes a limitation on scope, you can't talk to my security people, for example, or you can't talk to my systems development people, or I have documentation but I'm not going to show it to you. And I mean that are the sorts of things that keeps an auditor from coming up with, you know, an independent objective opinion, and those would be cited in any audit report.
Okay. So now coming to the inventory of different things that IT audit actually encapsulates, we talk about people, policies, processes, communications, hardware, software, and things of that nature. At the same time, when we start looking at anything from a risk and governance standpoint, as we spoke earlier, we need to also use strategy, the IT strategy, since we're talking about IT audits here, or business strategy along with it as a potential benchmark, and also inventory that and make that as a yardstick for you to figure out where the gaps are, where the changes have to be made, where the risks are existing, or governance gaps are and gaping holes are there. So is ever a strategy brought in and included as part of the IT audit inventory?
Well, I think speaking to what Everett and Anton were talking about before, it really comes down to scope and what kind of an audit you're commissioning and what kinds of risk management you're looking to evaluate at a given point in time. I know among our readership, we've talked to users in many different industries, whether it's healthcare or manufacturing or business services, where as far as strategy goes, it's really an involving the audit people in an upfront manner and reaching out to them when you're building your strategy or launching into projects and making sure that you have any concerns that they may come back with later sort of addressed from the get-go in the beginning. So in our experience, although there are some frameworks that do encapsulate strategy, I think most of the audits we've talked to folks about are more tactical, if you will. And the strategic aspect is more the reaching out when you're embarking on new projects and trying to involve auditors in that way.
Yeah, I would second that. You know, there's, if you're doing a financial statement audit, for example, the IT strategy is probably not part of that. But it's very helpful to the auditor, as Ann points out, to understand the direction the IT organization is going, how the IT strategy aligns with the business strategy, or whether it aligns at all, and issues like that, which are high-level issues, which help set the tone and process to be used in the audit.
Would you actually report on that discrepancy?
Well, in that situation, you probably wouldn't be auditing the strategy. It's sort of background information. But if there were significant areas where the IT strategy and the business strategies weren't aligned, that might be something that would be in the findings report to management.
Yeah, I think I guess the first thing I want to say, to underscore Everett's last point, at a minimum, understanding is important to alignment and even to people to understand what they're doing is relevant to the business, even from an auditor, internal or external. For them to understand where the business is going helps them apply themselves and what they're looking to do, and even focus where they may look to find if there are deficiencies or issues that need to be brought to the attention of the business. I think, but you know, in the truest sense, it is an operational task. It is, to Ann's point, a tactical function. It is not a strategic alignment function. The way I look at strategy, strategy is a focus point, and the alignment tasks are the area in which audit then gets to focus. And that alignment, for me, falls down to the projects, falls down to the efforts that are actually employed, right, to support that business and move in the same direction or in the direction of that strategic initiative. So I think to be quite clear, the audit is driving the operation, reviewing the operational effectiveness is the best way I can kind of phrase it as. And I think within that, that effectiveness can either directly or indirectly affect the goal of the business. And I think to that extent, that is the only area of involvement I think that the audit process needs to be involved with that. So by awareness, yes. By active involvement and measure, no.
I would just add there are some audit organizations, internal auditing mainly, who have been very involved in things like, is the organization getting value from their IT spend, and you know, how do IT projects help the various business processes, and is there alignment there with the business objectives, and it's a whole value driven approach to the audit. And those are not very frequent, but they are very interesting and very beneficial to the business when they can be conducted that way.
So one thing which has been noted, some cases at least, that the internal auditor doesn't get as much respect as an external auditor. Why is that? Anyone?
Interesting. Well, I mean, I would certainly say that obviously somebody coming in from the outside, particularly if they have high-level credentials and, you know, they're from an Ernst & Young or some name-brand company like that, you know, they're consultants and they're very polished typically, and they're coming in from the outside, and they're to be feared, quite frankly, because they have some sort of unknown power, if you will, that someone who works for your company may not be viewed in the same way. So that's not to say they're more or less qualified than your internal people. But nonetheless, they may command the respect, as you say, Sanjog.
Let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back after these messages and just take further thoughts on this, because what has been seen is that internal auditors, they are kind of stepping stone to you making your organizations effective. And if they are able to do their job well, when comes the time when an external auditor has to come and give a seal of approval, then at that time you would not have as many exceptions, and we would not have to go back to the drawing board and make it also public that there were so many gaping holes in an organization. So that some proactive work can be done, but it also, again, boils down to the amount of effort that an internal auditor puts in and the kind of support that they get in order for them to be able to do their job well. So let's talk more about it when we come back from the break, so please stay tuned.
Money, money, up-to-date business and financial news. Money, money, call now and get the financial information you need. 866-472-5790. 866-472-5790. Voice America Business.
Looking for flexible ways to scale your IT efforts? Then visit www.avol.com today. Avol helps companies find the global IT talent they need to align their IT and business objectives. Whether it's hiring top IT leadership talent or building a reliable technology team, Avol delivers. To find out how Avol can help your company, visit www.avol.com or call 1-800-947-2832. Evol, delivering global IT talent. That's www.evol, A-V-V-A-L, evol.com. Visit today.
Dad, can I ask you something?
Sure.
There's this girl I kind of like.
Say no more.
You just have to impress her. Okay, but how?
Just, I don't know, pick up a lot of heavy things around her.
Like what?
You know, desks, chairs, people. Grunt if you have to.
Grunt?
Yeah, be like, There you go.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. When you adopt a child from foster care, just being there makes all the difference. To learn more, call 1-888-200-4005. A public service announcement brought to you by Adopt U.S. Kids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
CIO Decisions is the first executive IT magazine to focus on mid-sized businesses. CIO Decisions offers IT executives management strategies and advice for aligning business and IT at fast-growing mid-sized companies. Subscribe today and receive 12 monthly issues of CIO Decisions magazine at no charge to you. Visit ciodecisions.com/subscribe1.
Succeeding in your business isn't just about making a living. It's a way of life. Hosts Cliff Inenko and Susan Wilson-Salovic discuss the practical as well as the not-so-practical aspects of owning your own business. Tune in every Thursday morning at 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time for Succeeding in Your Business, right here on the Voice America Business Channel.
The bottom line in business. Voice America Business.
You are listening to CIO Talk Radio. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. If you have a question or comment, call toll-free 1-866-472-5790. Now back to the show. Here's Sanjo Gall.
Welcome back. Today's topic is effective IT audits and auditors. Our guests for today's show are Anne McCroy, Everett Johnson, and Anton Shigori. Anne is the editorial director, editor-in-chief of CIO Decisions Magazine and Conference. Everett is the past international president of ISAC and the IT Governance Institute, and Anton is the executive vice president and chief information officer with the American Stock Exchange. We were talking about the internal auditors not taken seriously as compared to external. What's going on? Why are they not taken seriously? Maybe they are too involved too frequently with the folks. So what are the different reasons? Anne had her thoughts, and Everett?
Well, let me try and defend the internal auditors a bit here. The internal audit profession has really grown and strengthened in the last 20 years. I think it's been played a significant role in a lot of IT audit organizations, and it has attracted a number of people from external audit firms into the internal audit profession. They are very qualified, generally. Many are certified information systems auditors, which is a certification that's offered by ASACA, I think if there's any lack of respect, it's probably a little bit like maybe you treat members of your family different than you do when you have guests at your house. But respect is earned, and I think they have all the right tools and qualifications by and large. Now that may differ from organization to organization, but as a profession, they are very highly respected.
I definitely agree that the audit industry has grown, at least in my agreement, it's really on the commercial side. I still think on the internal audit, even with the networking effect of the big four, you know, trying to, you know, to spread out into the companies, but I think the majority of companies that I've seen, there is an issue around, and I think I don't think everybody disagrees with this, but there is an issue around that familiarity with the internal auditor. I think there is an issue of what I consider domain expertise that's brought to the table, and how the people that are being audited feel that, you know, that peer is, and how qualified are they in going through what they do. So I made a comment, you know, before. You know, I'm saying that, you know, the best auditors, at least that I see from a pure technical nature and operation nature, are previous practitioners. And by doing that, at least one, there's an earned respect when they've shared the same trenches together. And there's also an increased amount of effectiveness with that. And what at least I've seen in the last several years, and the companies that I've been dealing with, there is a lot of pressure on getting people that have that applied experience that make the routine audits, the internal audits, effective, and at least to a point in which that there is, I guess, on top of the at the service respect, but the operating respect and what I consider the valid findings that they can bring to the table, and then how the companies can react.
Let me just add to Antoine's point about practitioners. There's a number of internal audit organizations that will very often rotate people from the IT organization into an internal audit role, people who know an area very deeply. And they use the internal audit role to sort of broaden their experience and to provide, you know, that intimate working knowledge to the internal audit team. And those programs can be very effective in achieving the kind of objective that Antoine was talking about.
But let's talk about the fact that IT auditor, when he or she goes out into the field and try to carry out an effective audit, they need the ammunition, and that starts from knowing what people do, what their roles are, and also the information about what exists in the organization, for that's what they're about to audit. Now, coming to that, there have been chronic situations where we have systems applications, some new, some old, some legacy, and also a lot of people who've changed their roles over the years, but their role description has not been updated. So when you have such a discrepancy, maybe this auditor would come in and say, you got some cleaner work to do before you want me to come in and try to poke holes. So how do you deal with this?
Well, I think Sarbanes-Oxley was probably the biggest catalyst to getting good documentation in place that we've had in years. There were a number of organizations that had pretty good controls and good operating practices, but none of it was written down. And they were in a position of having to demonstrate that management understood what the controls were, that these controls had been tested by management, so that process could have been audited by the external auditor. I would say completing this documentation and testing was kind of the lion's share of the get-ready effort for your first Sarbanes-Oxley audit in many organizations. Others had pretty good documentation and maybe just had to do some of the testing.
Yeah, I would agree with Everett in terms of just the need for documentation, which I spoke to a little bit earlier. I mean, here at the magazine, we cover the mid-market, which we define as companies with $50 million to $1 billion in revenue. So there's quite a few private companies in there that aren't subject to some of the same regulations like Sarbanes-Oxley that public companies are. But we also see a lot of companies growing very quickly, growing by M&A, needing to suddenly have an audit where they hadn't had really anything before, or certainly nothing of the magnitude as required by some of the regulations of public companies. So for them, often it is a very scurrying activity to then go about and make sure that you have everything that you need. Typically, in a very busy, fast-growing organization, everything changes so quickly that it is a challenge to really stay on top of it. So I think being able to do that and harness all your resources to get ready for an audit is a big part of going public. Or even needing to prepare for an audit for other reasons, whether for internal risk management or just because some of your partners may require it. So, but as we've said, it does come down to documentation and the need to really do that thoroughly and be ready for the audit.
I guess probably to comment Ann's comment, especially in the market demographic, we at the exchange, I mean, we live in the space of the mid-cap companies and the small mid-cap companies going public and making that transition. I think in doing that, yeah, there is one to learn. There is a shift in the importance of artifacts, if you can use a term, to kind of make at least the audit process become effective and at least moving towards their public obligations on compliance. I think to go back to the heart of the question, or at least to bring it maybe to a little bit of a focus for me to comment to, and I'm going to key off something Everett said earlier in the call, it's really around the engagement process. It's around the scope process, and it's the requirements when you start an audit. And for me, and the way I look at this from an applied management perspective, if we have an order that has the experience and there is a request for documentation, then there is a need to make sure that we have the artifacts available and that we have an organizational roadmap. And if there are deficiencies within the staff and responsibilities or the deficiencies within the relationship documents or artifacts around systems, if that's the topic we're talking about, that stops or freezes the engagement process. And that, to me, initiates what I consider an escalation path. Because the one thing that I, as a manager responsible for this type of area, have to focus on for that fact is, hey, I have an obligation to the audit committee. I sit in front of them and go through, hey, to what extent have we met our schedule, presented a schedule, completed audits effectively, and what are we doing on findings? So it's just much an issue for me if I'm false starting, again, to kind of put a phrase to it, is a problem that identifies issues. And I think if there's inadequate control, and again, that's the important word here, around what initiates the audit process, That to me addresses half of these issues. At least then it forces a diligence on the organizations, and then it kind of forces the visibility all the way to the audit committee that this process is moving.
There's been a real shift in attitudes, I think, in recent years. I can remember in the early days of auditing, I very often got the comment of, you know, controls and documentation, that's something we only need for auditors, for you auditors. And now it's, you can't run a business effectively, particularly an IT operation, without some of this documentation, so that as employees turn over, they have tools to understand how things are supposed to happen and what their roles are and so forth. It's just a business essential today.
And we've certainly noticed as well when I was talking about all the M&A activity, for example, but we also have a lot of homegrown systems in the mid-market from companies that started in the 60s and 70s and 80s and have some legacy backroom system, and the guy retires and nobody knows how to run it or how to do any kind of, you know, due diligence in terms of, you know, where might this, what is the security around this application, so that they basically have to start from scratch and rip it out. Now, maybe that's not a bad idea for other reasons, but still, have there been documentation and process control along the way, that wouldn't be such a major factor when somebody leaves.
We always take IT audit as policing versus an opportunity where you can, you know, take a step back and take a look at how things have been going on all along. So maybe that mindset is what is, preventing us from making the most out of this. So talking about risks, we do want to find risk, and that is the underpinning of any kind of audit process. Now, in order for an auditor to go out and classify an event, or in fact say report that this is what you should be doing when an event is classified as low, medium, or high, but that, again, information has to come from the management. What's the due diligence process that we are supposed to have in place, which will, on an ongoing basis, evaluate what kind of events will cause what kind of business impact, and impact to the systems and applications and people, and based on that, how do we categorize those and then hand it over on a silver platter to an auditor so that when he or she comes, they basically do the fact-finding, have the substantiation available, and use these different levels of events, put on a risk register, and then report on them. So let's talk more about this whole thing when we come back from the break, so please stay tuned.
Stocks, bonds, 401ks, investments, refinancing. We can help you. Call now toll free, 866-472-5790, 866-472-5790. Voice America Business.
Looking for flexible ways to scale your IT efforts? Then visit www.avol.com today. Avol helps companies find the global IT talent they need to align their IT and business objectives. Whether it's hiring top IT leadership talent or building a reliable technology team, Avol delivers. To find out how Avol can help your company, visit www.avol.com or call 1-800-947-2832. Evol, delivering global IT talent. That's www.evol, A-V-V-A-L, evol.com. Visit today.
Get into the trenches with the latest technology, innovations, and trends, and uncover what's really driving how businesses use technology to achieve maximum efficiencies in their operations. Host Dave Sassone and his guests will dig deep, analyze, and cut through the hype to bring you honest and thought-provoking discussions on the technology shaping the business world. Technically Speaking with Dave Sassone, broadcast live every Wednesday at 11 Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America Business Channel.
CIO Decisions is the first executive IT magazine to focus on mid-sized businesses. CIO Decisions offers IT executives management strategies and advice for aligning business and IT at fast-growing mid-sized companies. Subscribe today and receive 12 monthly issues of CIO Decisions magazine at no charge to you. Visit ciodecisions.com/subscribe1.
Hey, kid. Over here, inside your radio. Name's Ralph. I'm an energy hog. Hey, if you're gonna waste energy in your home, I'm gonna pig out on it. Anyway, I got a deal for you. There's this new website called energyhog.org. Forget about it. It teaches kids how to get rid of us energy hogs. So you promise not to log on to energyhog.org, and I promise not to eat your radio. Deal?
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Energy and the Ad Council.
The Internet's only all business and financial radio network, Voice America Business.
You are listening to CIO Talk Radio. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. If you have a question or comment, call toll-free 1-866-472-5790. Now back to the show. Here's Sanjoy Gall.
Welcome back to the show, folks. We were discussing about risk in an IT audit situation. And we were also looking at the fact that something should be in place as a benchmark or as a yardstick for the IT auditors to be able to classify an event as a low, medium, or high risk, and then use that as a way to report the different events which could happen and what is the impact on the business, and correspondingly carry out their whole auditing process. Since very few organizations have that, you know, something could put on a silver platter for these auditors, then how they are expected in the first place to carry out their work?
I think, one, just to, you know, to kind of put my intentions clear, I'm a huge supporter of a risk management process and a risk categorization methodology of how we're applying audits. And I think, although it's common sense in everyone's conversation, I've seen it often not used in practice. And that, to me, ultimately diminishes the audit effectiveness. And I think, you know, ultimately, you know, how can we get the auditor, or how we get, to, I don't know, whether it be internal or external, the ability to apply that rating. I think that's going to vary per company, but I think at a minimum it does require, you know, either some knowledge of the business, some involvement of management of actually going through those and either working with the auditors, or if it's an internal auditor, at least making sure, again, they're aware, to be repetitive on our call, of what the initiatives and what the position and what the competitive pressures may be or operating requirements may be of the business. So I think, one, it can be adopted by internal auditors with the awareness and with what I consider the proper input, right, and guidance, but not, you know, not overpowering hands of management. That helps on the one hand. I do also believe, even, you know, small mid-sized companies, there's an ability to actually create that risk management process or embody that responsibility in an individual, albeit even maybe a business responsible person, in the sense of, again, applying that ability to look at 10,000 feet and see what impacts the business. But I think, you know, generally speaking, that needs to be embodied in the process, and I think that starts with the active involvement of the people that have the knowledge of the business.
Yeah, I would agree with Anton. I mean, risk management really comes down to understanding, you know, what are the key assets of the business, and really where are the key risk points. And from an IT perspective, you need to really have an asset inventory and really rate those assets so that you know which are the key ones that, if they're compromised, you're really going to have some problems. So typically that's what we see companies doing, is really using that asset classification strategy kind of as the first level, if you will, of really building a greater risk management strategy around it. And so I think just coming into an organization, if an auditor is able to get the high-level view from the business side as well as from the IT side, you know, that's a really good starting point for them.
Yeah, I think that a risk management approach is something every organization should be doing, whether they have audits or not. It's a business practice that just makes good business sense to identify what your risks are to the business and either try and do something to mitigate those risks through controls or transfer the risk through insurance or say this is a level of risk we're willing to tolerate. That then provides a framework within which an audit can be planned, and many audit organizations will start with that and say, now where are the high risk areas, and those will get priority from an audit point of view. Now, to come back to the question that was originally asked, you know, what happens if that's not in place? IT auditors, you know, generally have very extensive training and experience in IT risks and controls. But it's still difficult for them to substitute their judgment for that of management. But there are tools. ITGI's COBIT has a lot of information that can help with this process. We've just recently released a set of COBIT control practices, which takes area by area and describes for each category of controls the types of risks that it mitigates. And where it can add value to the organization. So this can be a good starting point for a discussion between the auditor and management about what the risks really are and how they should be ranked. There's a school of thought that says there is no such thing as an IT risk. They're all business risks. And so you may need to involve other people in the organization outside of the IT organization.
Let's talk about the fact that, you know, business and IT are both moving at a warp speed, and IT audits really would have to play catch up if they were to continually, you know, look at what changed and what the gaps are and what risks got introduced or what anomalies got introduced and report on them so that we can do proactive fixing and, filling up the holes. So the IT audit methodology, which was used X number of years ago, a decade or so ago, may not, in terms of at least the frequency and the speed and the way we carry that out, may not be 100% applicable to today's world. And that's just an assumption. So let's see if Everett, you feel, is that right? I mean, we should have some sort of an agile IT audit methodology that should be, you know, evolving out of this whole changing business scenario.
Well, I'm not so sure it's the methodology that needs to change as much as the auditor's involvement early on as things change, and the auditor's understanding of the new technologies that are implemented, the new infrastructure, the new business concepts, and so forth. The auditor, very often gets the training on, you know, new technologies and new tools and matters such as these, but if they're not involved in what's going on in the organization, in the business process, it makes them more difficult to plan the audits and conduct them properly. A lot of IT organizations will just include auditors in their training sessions and their planning sessions that they have with the IT staff to help that process along. So it's not so much the methodology, it's the keeping current with the technology and the practices and the approach that's being taken as business changes.
Right. I agree, and I'd love to be more contentious in saying I agree, but I definitely agree in the sense that I think in the true technical operations, yeah, the industry is getting very agile. The amount of agile development being done, iterative development being done now, is scary at the rate of adoption we've seen in the industry. And in doing that, it does nothing to impede or to encourage any changes in the audit methodology. Audit is still a latent event. It's still an after the fact. It's looking at what's happened, and what is currently in place to kind of identify issues. Where I think it is beneficial, and I guess I'll probably underscore the sentiment, is around that awareness. And I agree, and to Everett's point, we have tried to include auditors and have them almost basically train alongside different members of technology and operations staff so they are aware and they can at least understand at least or can adopt quicker to what they're looking to make an assessment of. The second issue that we're trying to do, which I'm sure it's not a novel concept, but it's almost trying to streamline the process for which audit depends on. So it's almost looking at the development methodologies, the operating methodologies, the processes and the controls as we're creating them to at least be mindful of what audit would be looking for when they were to do an assessment. So at least then, outside of the effectiveness or the review of the effectiveness of the controls, at least there's enough there in which it's really just going through the actual operation itself and validating that against the artifacts that have been created throughout that life cycle. So I think, if anything, I think it's probably more of an adoption on the development side and the operation side rather than the audit side. But I do think it does lay question to how integrated can audit be, right, and still maintain an effective position in the business.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with audit with Everett and Anton as far as the proactive approach goes. Certainly we've talked to many people who find that the iterative changes that you're able to make throughout a year are really important, and so you're able to sort of raise the level of your compliance really as you go along. So as Anton was saying, the actual audit is really just a check and balance against that to make sure that you did everything that you said that you were going to do. And I'll also just add that I don't think that the number of audits per year is really something that could be increased so that the iterative approach really is advisable. Certainly I've been to events. I was at a security event not too long ago, and there were some security auditors there talking about the list of stuff that the department then had to deal with after the audit. And just being able to wade through that and get everything fixed and ready for the next time can be a comprehensive undertaking, so that it's really an ongoing thing. So the more people are able to build that into the front end of their process, the better off they're going to be and just not playing catch up with what the auditor has cited in the past.
On behalf of the show and our listeners, I would really like to thank you, Ann, Everett, and Anton, for sharing your experience and insight about how organizations can enable as well as empower the auditors to carry out their audit function effectively and leverage audits as a tool to bring about continual positive change in their own organization. Now, unfortunately, IT audits have been mostly seen as synonymous to policing and fault finding in many cases. In some cases, of course, things are different. But it is not surprising to see that the lack of interest and support is there and it's been provided to carry out their job effectively. IT leadership as well as executive management needs to demonstrate to its people through interactive sessions or some other form of communication and constantly tell them that how important IT audits can be and how can they help validate their IT and business strategy and also can help keep things on track for maximum efficiency and effectiveness for an organization. Now, the question is, how many organizations are essentially really getting the benefit out of IT audits? So please share your stories with us at views@ciotalkradio.com. That is views@ciotalkradio.com. Thank you again for listening to CIO Talk Radio. This is Sanjog Aul, your talk show host. Till next week, take care and God bless.
Thank you for tuning in to CIO Talk Radio. To learn more about the show, please visit www.ciotalkradio.com. Join Sanjog Aul next Wednesday at 9 a.m. Central, 7 a.m. Pacific for another hour of CIO Talk Radio.